All right, what is up, Crip Nation? It's your favorite host here, Bryson Pizzamine, coming at you live from San Diego. And today, we are joined by Loy Liu, the founder of Kyber Network. So, Loy, welcome to the show.
Hey guys. Thanks for having me.
Man, we couldn't be more stoked. Pizzamine, how are you doing over there? We're not together today when we're recording this, but life's good by you too, man. You're feeling better?
Life's always better when you're next to me, but I'm doing okay without you today. Really, really excited we get a chance to talk to Loy Liu and learn more about what Kyber Network is doing for crypto.
Yeah, man. I mean, I feel like the last like three or four episodes, we're just like, yo, I'm getting over being sick. You're getting over being sick. But I feel like tomorrow is going to be the perfect day because we're going to be better. And Loy was sick last time. We were trying to do this episode forever, it feels like, and everybody's just kind of been sick. So anyhow, enough about that. Everybody's feeling better. Let's just jump into it. Loy, real quick. Tell us a little bit about your background and why you got into crypto and, you know, why you started Kyber Network.
I mean, I'm happy to share, you know, so it was, I got into crypto back in, you know, late 2013 and early 2014 when I was doing my research in applied cryptography. And then I, you know, I stumbled in onto an article on, I think, on Bloomberg or on Forbes about, you know, Bitcoin and how it rise, you know, to all time high back then, and what's the value of Bitcoin, things like that. And then I got really curious about, you know, what is this new thing called Bitcoin and blockchain, and what is it, what you know, if and I was curious to see whether there's anything for me to do there, right? Because as a researcher, I always, you know, look for, you know, problems and research problem for me to solve. And, you know, after digging into the mailing list of the Bitcoin dev, I got really interested in it. And I managed to convince my, you know, PhD supervisor to, you know, let me to start doing like full-time research on Bitcoin, blockchain. And then later on is Ethereum when they launch. Yeah, and then I just, you know, started doing full-time research on it during my PhD program at NUS here in Singapore. That's how I started. And then, you know, we started, like, you know, building tools for the you know, Ethereum blockchain, writing, you know, research paper about, you know, security problems, about how to scale up the public blockchains and things like that. I think we were the first group, the first academic group to release a, you know, a security analyzer for a smart contract on Ethereum. And then we also like released the first sharding, you know, the first, you know, protocol for public blockchain use sharding. And Silica is a blockchain. It's the first blockchain that got inspired from that that paper as well.
Could you repeat that? What was that called? Silica?
Zilliqa.
Oh, Zilliqa. Yes. Sorry. Wonderful.
Yeah. You know, in early 2017, together with you know, a couple of other co-founders, well, you know, we just you know, as curious as you know, because we all were like researcher and academic, you know, having academic background, we were like, you know, what's the problem that, you know, all the cryptocurrency users or the community are having, but no one is actually really solving it. And then we look around, you know, we realized that, you know, although we will talk about, you know, public blockchain, decentralization, trustless nature of it, but a lot of us are still using centralized chains, and there are a lot of hacking incident, internet fraud, and things like that. So that's why we decided, like, you know, this is the problem that we need to solve. This is the problem that are going to impact millions of people when things go bad, right? So that's how we started looking at building a centralized trading solution. And a few months later, we'll start the Kyber Network.
That sounds amazing. So, I mean, there's a lot of decentralized exchanges out there. This is kind of a fun one, but what would you say is the most impressive stat that Kyber Network has in your mind?
I think since we started, we always optimize for two things, right? First of all, it's usability. We really want to make it, you know, super easy for even the mainstream users to start using decentralized trading, right? And the second one is we optimize for integration, as in we want to make it like extremely easy and basically no barrier for any other dApp, any other smart contract to integrate with Kyber, right? So that's why, you know, so far we have been growing in terms of number of users, number of transactions, and number of platforms and other dApp that are integrating with Kyber and using Kyber as the trading layer. And in all the numbers, we are leading the decentralized trading space at the moment in Ethereum.
What are the problems that you guys are trying to solve by having a decentralized exchange?
I think all the decentralized exchanges are solving a similar problem, right? They want to offer a secure and safe environment for the users to trade cryptocurrencies, and Kyber is even more optimized in the usability aspect, as in it's going to be decentralized and trustless, but also it has to be very easy, very user-friendly, right, for anyone to use. And as I mentioned earlier, we also want to provide the decentralized exchanges for the dApp and for the smart contract as well, because, you know, the way we design Kyber is that we run everything on the smart contract. So that makes it extremely easy for a smart contract, for dApp to integrate with us, and they don't have to trust any centralized exchanges, right? Because if there are a couple of other models that actually have a centralized exchange, a centralized server in the middle, because they use a hybrid model, right? And if the moment that you introduce a centralized server there, there's a breach of trust, right? Like you have to trust that centralized server to behave honestly. But for Kyber, we run everything fully on-chain. You can monitor, you can verify all the transactions, all the parameters before you can actually trade with Kyber. So that makes it, first of all, fully transparent. And secondly, very easy to integrate, because you basically only need to talk to our smart contract. You don't need to talk to any other third-party server in order to integrate with Kyber.
Very cool. So, you know, this is probably going to sound kind of funny, but I don't really mean it to be funny. So we talk a lot about my mom on the show, and we want to make sure that people like my mom understand the importance of decentralization and understand, you know, like all the things that you said make sense to us geeks, right? Where, you know, of course, right, it's important to have on-chain, decentralized, trustless, you know, swaps, peer-to-peer and privacy and all these things. But you know, a lot of these people that, you know, listen to Crypto 101 and a lot of the people that are trying to get informed about cryptocurrency, none of the fancy schmancy technical talk really matters. So how would you break down like the importance of Kyber Network, like into a couple sentences? Like, why is it so important what you're building?
That's very interesting because when I talk to other people as well, they are also well, there have been like trading stocks and bonds and everything all the time, right? And they look like, you know, everything is still working for them. But when I tell them about the advantages that Kyber has, they're just amazed, right? So often I think there are a couple of features that really like differentiate what we have and really like, you know, raise the bar from the traditional system. Like traditional trading exchanges, right? So I think a couple of things. The first one is that when you trade, you can just trade immediately, right? If you trade with like stock exchange or even like, you know, centralized cryptocurrency exchange, you have to like, you know, make the deposit, wait for the confirmation and things like that. But here at at Kyber and other decentralized exchanges as well, you only need to plug your wallet or, you know, plug your, you know, MetaMask or whatever, right? And then you can just trade immediately. you don't have to wait for you know, confirmation. You don't have to wait for deposit or things like that, and you can just do it right, like right from your wallet. And secondly, the settlement. Right, if you ever trade stock, you have to wait for like T+1 or T+2. After you buy the stock, you have to wait for a long time, right? But here, everything is just, you know, after your transaction is done, you just got everything and you can just walk away, right? You don't have to wait until the broker call you and confirm that the trade has been settled, or, you know, you have to wait until the weekend is over and Mondays, the weekdays are coming so that you know, other people can confirm and settle the trade for you. But here, everything just work 24/7, right? And it settles immediately, so you can have the peace of mind. I think these are the two things that when I talk to other people, like the traditional traders, they're like, wow, they never believe that, you know, there are already technology that could have them do that.
Yeah, no, that's amazing. I feel like one of the things that, you know, you just picked up on and that a lot of people don't think about really is the fact that, you know, cryptocurrency is a 24/7 animal. And whereas traditional financial structures are, you know, 5 days a week, 8 hours a day. And, you know, the world moves a lot quicker than that. So I think, you know, one of the helpful ways to think about cryptocurrency, you know, mom, if you're listening, I know you are, you know, think of it as, you know, cryptocurrency is money at the speed of life, really, and trading and settlement at the speed of life, which is 24/7, globally networked, you know, never takes a day off. And all these systems are being automated on the back end through smart contracts. Okay, let's just move on and hop on over to the next question, Pizza Mind.
What is the difference between a program, a platform, and a protocol? Since we're talking about technical terms, these are three things. They all start with the letter P. They can be very, very confusing as people are learning about these crypto projects and wondering, are these terms used interchangeably to mean the same thing, or is there a difference? Well, would you mind shedding some light on that?
Sure. Okay, so we have program, protocol, and what's the third one?
Platform.
Oh, platform. Okay, got it. I guess, you know, protocol is just some specification, right? Like, you know, it's a set of rules that's how things should work and how people should interact with each other. Basically, it's just specification, right?
And could you give us a real world example of a protocol and of each one?
Sure. I think we can just use the internet protocol, right? Like, you know, there are internet, there are routers. There are your PC, there are router, there are, you know, the DNS and all these things. So protocol, the internet protocol basically dictate how each of the component to talk to each other, what's the message format and things like that, right? And then the program is what implement the protocol, right? Like, for example, in your PC, you have some particular program that implement all the rules so that your PC can connect to the internet, right? It can handle all the messages from other parties on the internet when they want to talk to your PC, for example, right? Is it clear?
And then what was the third one, Pete?
The third one is the platform, right? So the platform is basically similar to so the platform includes, you know, the program, and also probably it's broader in a way that it allows other people to interact with the program, right? Like, for example, if you launch, if you make your program available so that other people can use, then now you actually make it a platform, right? Like, other people can come to your platform and start using your program, start using whatever service that your program can offer. So yeah, basically, I think that's the basic differentiation between all three.
Yeah, that's a perfect description. So would you call Kyber Network like a decentralized, also liquidity provider? Would that make sense?
So for us, we have different things, right? The main thing that we have been working in the last 2 years is a protocol, right? So we specify how the liquidity providers should, you know, work with the networks to provide liquidity for others, right? We also have specification for the liquidity takers, right, the users, how they should interact with the smart contract in order to trade with the providers, right, to take liquidity from the liquidity providers. And we also provide the end user platform so that when the end user, they come to the platform, they can actually do the action, they can actually do the trade, right? And that platform is called KyberSwap that we have available on KyberSwap.com. And
iOS and Android, right?
Also on iOS and Android as well.
Yeah. So guys, go, that's KyberSwap, K-Y-B-E-R swap. And it's basically like a decentralized exchange where you could go and you could trade any ERC-20 token into another ERC-20 token. And I use it, Loy, and it's pretty freaking slick.
Thanks. I use it all the time. But if
there's you get good notifications too.
Yeah. If there's any feedback or suggestion, feel free to talk to the team. We'll make sure to implement it, as soon as possible.
Before we move on, I want just to explain how important liquidity is, especially amongst decentralized exchanges.
Please do.
This is a huge deal. Let's think of a liquidity in terms of non-crypto stuff. Like, let's say liquidity for food would be Grubhub.
Love it.
You're no longer stuck to going to a restaurant and only ordering what's on their menu. You go to Grubhub or DoorDash and they literally deliver you anything within, 10 miles. That's an example of liquidity. But there's an even bigger example of liquidity that we're all familiar with, and that's Amazon. Amazon is a liquidity for goods. Instead of having to go to Active's store for apparel, and then the Nike store, and then the Adidas store, and then outdoor living for a tent, I can order all that because Amazon provides liquidity for all these things in their own warehouses and then delivers it.
Brilliant analogy. I love that.
That's a perfect example. Yeah.
Yeah. And in the same way, KyberSwap kind of does that, except for cryptocurrencies.
Yeah. Exactly. That's why it's such a big deal.
So there's a token attached to the Kyber network. Is that right?
Right.
How does that token work?
So currently the token is, it serves several purposes. So the first one is that it serves as a fees of the platform. So that for every trade, the liquidity providers, they have to pay some small fees to the smart contract, and this smart contract will use the fee to distribute to the wallets or to the website that facilitate the trade, right? A portion of that is also to be burned, as in to be taken out of circulation. So this serves two things. First of all, it facilitates and it incentivizes other people to introduce more users, to serve users better so that they can trade on Kyber, because every trade happens, they will get some commission fees, right? So that's why we have like a lot of wallets that have integrated with Kyber, like MITRE wallet, Engine wallet. We also have Trust wallet and of course KyberSwap as well. And the second thing is that we are experimenting with the deflation model, as in the more activities happen on Kyber network, the less in terms of number, total number of supplied of currency becomes, right? And this is basically the burning model that a few other popular tokens are experimenting with, like Maker and BNB and all these tokens.
Yeah, it's a really smart idea. And, I think many economists in today's day and age think deflation is the devil because it kind of leads to stagnation in growth and stuff. But also on the flip side, deflation is what causes the price of a currency, or I should say the value of a currency, to go up over time as opposed to down over time, because there's actually a supply side effect whereby you're not actually putting any new currency into circulation, you're actually taking it out. So do you kind of foresee a world where, right now we're in an inflationary system, but would we ever adopt a deflationary system like worldwide, or are there going to be just different currencies you'll have the choice to save in? And I don't know, how do you see this all playing out?
I think, first of all, I'm not sure if it ever happens in the real world currency, right? I think the reason why we could do it in cryptocurrency is because, first of all, everything is just very easy to split, right? So you could imagine that one currency token now, you can split it into millions or even billions of smaller pieces, right?
But you could basically put a Bitcoin into 8 decimal points or a Kyber token in 8, right?
Exactly, right? Like people can get like 10 to minus 8 Bitcoin, right? And they're still happy with that. So even if we like burn all the Bitcoin in the world, right? And we are left with only one Bitcoin, we can still split that into 10 million more pieces, right? And people can still be happy and can still very easy to hold that one small pieces, right? As long as it has the value. But in real world currency, what's the smallest that you can split into, right? Of the $1 bill. It's still $1 bill. You cannot tear it into half and then give the other half to other person.
But they do have coins and cents. They have coins and cents, right?
We do. Yeah. But if you keep burning and you keep having to, minting new coins, and inventing new coins that is really inconvenient for the users, right? But here in crypto, you can just do it and it's very easy, right? And people have been doing it all the time. So in terms of real world adoption of the deflation model, I'm not sure, but looks like it's working on for all the cryptocurrency tokens that are using that burning model.
It feels like deflationary metrics kind of fit the, because I feel like there's two different sides of the crypto story, right? There's your cryptocurrencies, and then there's your crypto assets. And I think it's important to make a kind of a delineation between those. But it seems like the crypto asset story plays better because it makes sense that a deflationary model would work well for assets but not currency, because you would reduce the supply of those assets over time, making it more scarce. But anyhow, that's kind of a tangent. Let's keep moving on here to let's just talk about, what the future is for Kyber Network. What's the next big release you guys got coming up?
So I think a lot of work has been done in the background to improve the liquidity that we have on Kyber. We have been talking to several professional market makers to ask them to bring their market making service on chain, right? So that we can offer much better liquidity on Kyber, and which in turn have a lot other dApp that have integrated with Kyber. And we are also experimenting with a couple of things. The first one is that we are doing a lot of experiment with decentralized governance. So we have we have did a couple of activities with Aragon and DAOStack. So the whole idea here is that we really want to learn from the community, what works and what doesn't, right? Because I believe that every community will have different governance model, different technology that serve that community. And the best way to find out is just to do the experiment, right? That's what we have been doing in the last few months. And we probably, do the third activity soon, toward the end of the year. And you can find out, what we got from all these, this DAO experiment from our blog post. And we all have, the report for each of the activity. So just go to blog.kyber.network to see that. And another thing is we are also observing and experimenting with all the scalability approach that are being developed in the Ethereum ecosystem. So recently there's Rollup and a couple of other layer 2 solutions. So these activities will require a lot of time. And we also have to think to develop them in a way that it won't impact the current ecosystem that Kyber is building. Because if you just look at the number of dApps and wallet and all the different partners that have integrated with Kyber, we have more than 70 of them, right? Like 7-0. That's a lot. So we just don't want like to have an upgrade that introduced a lot of pain points to the end users and to the partners that have integrated with Kyber. Yeah, I think that's pretty much it for the next few months. And
decentralized governance is such an interesting thing.
I love
it. It's almost like letting your kid go to school for the first time. You spend years and years molding something into your own image, and then you hand over the keys to the community and you hope for the best. What are some of your biggest fears about you relinquishing control over the community, and what are some of your highest hopes?
I think the highest fear is that, you know, the community would just don't care, right? They're like, you know, you guys have been doing a good job, so why don't you guys just continue doing that? Like, why do you want to push, the kid to us, right? And I think I have seen that in a couple of like other projects. You know, they launch centralized governance and only a few people actually participate in the voting. And that's just very bad, right? For the project. And it's no better than just letting the team, running it and making all the decisions. But I think, that's why, you know, we have been doing a lot of experiment and see, which one is going to work and what's the feedback from the community. Whether they are interested, what makes them vote, and what makes them run away from the voting, and then things like that.
So anybody who holds a KNC token is considered, if they stake it, they could vote on how. And for people who aren't familiar with the term staking, you basically place your token, you lock it up, and then you get, for locking it up, a privilege on the platform. So is that how it works on your platform?
That's
for voting.
That's how it worked in one of our experiments, right, with Aragon. But in another experiment, we also like try to bring other ecosystem partners to be the voters, right? So the idea here is that you can introduce the new token that you call the voting tokens, right? And you can distribute that voting token to the KNC holders. You can introduce the token to the liquidity providers. You can also, send the token to people who run the wallet, who run the dApp that integrate with Kyber. So basically, the idea here is that, you know, the Kyber ecosystem is actually much broader than the KNC holders. But it's just one of the experiments, right? That we run, it turns out that both actually work, KNC token holders or KNC token holder plus other ecosystem partners. So I think I think that's also like, you know, one of our biggest hope in decentralized governance. We hope that, you know, the people will just, you know, participate more, and the people will be more engaging, right? In developing their protocol, in making proposal, applying for grant, voice the idea, what's the direction that they think is going to work. And they will just work on it in getting support from the community, from other DAO members and things like that, right? If that happens, then I think, that is a successful DAO. Otherwise, we can just switch back to what we are having right now, right?
I like it. Hey, Crypt Nation, real quick interruption from our wonderful sponsors over at eToro. If you guys haven't had a chance to check them out yet, I mean, we talk about them every day. You guys should really go check them out. Just go to crypto101podcast.com/eToro. And Pete, why don't you tell them about them? What is eToro?
It's one of the easiest ways to buy and sell crypto with confidence, first of all. They've been around since 2007. All the assets they have on there have been looked at really, really well. It's legal in over 140 countries and trusted by over 10 million users. So if you're not one of them, why?
Yeah, seriously, you got to be asking yourself that question. And, you know, they've been around since 2007. They started trading crypto assets in 2013. So these cats are the real freaking deal. And my favorite aspect about it is that it's so beginner friendly and it's so expert friendly, but they give you this $100,000 virtual trading simulator so you can practice, you know, executing trades and, you know, technical analysis and all that kind of stuff before you actually put your money where your mouth is. So that's my favorite aspect of the whole thing.
My favorite aspect is how easy it is to sign up. I didn't have to wait days for KYC to be approved or anything like that. Literally within 2 minutes, I was able to use my account.
Yeah, it's nuts. Anyhow, guys, as you know, not all platforms are created equal. So go ahead, check it out for yourself. And then hit us with a DM and let us know what you guys think. All right, back to the show. How long have you been building businesses for?
So we have been building Kyber for more than 2 years. It's been live for a year and a half.
Okay, awesome. You know, I mean, a lot of us here listening have never built our own business, but are maybe thinking about building our own business one day. So what would be some advice, like maybe the number one rule of building your own business or a rule of thumb that you kind of always found helped you be a successful CEO?
I think, for a project and a startup in this space, in the cryptocurrency space, I think just, move fast and don't be afraid of doing experiments, because a lot of things that there are a lot of things that we don't know, right? And the only way to find out is to do experiments and experiment. And if it doesn't work, just, don't be afraid of shutting it down and switch to a new one. The space is just, it's moving too fast and people will just forget, your previous failed experiment, right? And if you have a successful one, then everyone will just remember that.
Yeah, people forget how early we are in this space. I always like to think back in the early days of the internet, in the early 90s, I mean, that was even the mid 80s, people could have never imagined the full potential of the internet. You could have never imagined that you could be downloading or streaming 4K VR, because the bandwidth wasn't there and there were so many things that weren't there. But, 20, 25 years later, and, now it's more than text, right? It's that 4K VR experience. So kind of right now we're in the beginning stages of building crypto, but what's kind of the end vision in your mind? Like what's the logical conclusion that we can go with streaming value and streaming money?
I think we really need to find a way to have the connection with the traditional finance, because there are still like a lot of value flowed within the traditional financial system, right? And there are a lot of users, there are a lot of like people who are using it every day. Crypto, on the other hand, we're still, a small group of people working on something that is very new. It's very disruptive, but we still need to find a way to actually serve the broader part of the world, right? We still need to find a way to actually apply the crypto, the blockchain technology connect, all the traditional financial use cases and serve the mainstream people, the mainstream users. So our hope is that, in the next 5 to 10 years, we can actually do that and can bring a lot more, value and use cases from the traditional finance world to blockchain and to, especially the public blockchain like Ethereum or even Bitcoin, if it's possible.
Talking about decentralized exchanges, is it sort of like a dark web rather than, using something where they might have insurance or, they've got all their registrations or stuff? Is there any reason that a nice, honest, normal person would choose to use a decentralized exchange?
I think, there are different ways to implement your decentralized exchange, right? You can have a permissionless decentralized exchange in a way, like what Kyber and ZeroX and a few others people are building. Basically, you can just, free to trade, open to trade. You can just plug in your wallet and you can trade anytime. But you can also build a permissioned decentralized exchange, right? That means you can have the KYC system, do all the AML check and all the financial and all the activities that the financial players have been doing to onboard the users. And the matching and the settlement engine are going to be decentralized, right? And I think that's a way to work with the traditional financial use cases, because I think for them they care a lot more about risk, you know, AML and all this thing, as we have seen in a few debates recently about Libra and a few other stable coins. So basically, it's not a dark web. It's not a place. I mean, if you implement it properly, right? It's not a dark web. It's not a place where only like illegal activities or illicit activities happen there. If you want it to be proper, if you want it to have a certain policy to be implemented, you can still do it.
I know a lot of us here in this space, we think of decentralized as definitely the best way because we understand why. But to the average person, they're thinking, you know, a bank is someone that I trust. They have insurance. So they're a trusted third party. And then if you go to a trustless system, their mind immediately says, oh, untrusted rather than trustless. Trustless means no trust is required because there's no people there. It's all just code. It's all smart contracts.
And cryptography.
And cryptography and decentralization. So it's this whole living, breathing organism unto itself without one single point of failure. And that's the great part about it. But until you understand that, you just think, oh, it's an untrusted system. I don't know if I want to go there. All these rules and regulations that I know are in place at this other area aren't in existence over here or may not be in existence over here. And I don't know if I'm comfortable with that. But I want to mention, you know, very, very loudly that decentralized, trustless environments are absolutely 100% the best way to go because you're in control of your own money and your own keys and your own destiny.
But also, I mean, should be. Just Pete's just a real quick take the devil's advocate side. I mean, think about one of the reasons why crypto assets are so speculative and there are such great risks, you know, and great rewards, right? Like think first off, what other ecosystem has 99% drawdowns and still on legitimate projects, right? So that's one thing. So there's great risk and great reward and kind of how we say it's 100% the way to go. Well, dude, we saw Parity get hacked for $150 million or whatever it was back in November. I think it was 2017 or maybe 2018. And there's all sorts of different hacks and elements of our ecosystem that, you know, even though it's decentralized, there's still bugs in the code. So I think that's why the risk reward profile is so attractive, is because it's so untested and there are so many bugs that are getting kinked out. Like I don't, did you know if Parity ever reimbursed like Loy or Pete's or anybody, you know, whatever happened with that?
I don't know, but that's a really good point.
I don't think Parity like reimbursed people, but I think the you know, this kind of bug still happens in the traditional and centralized finance case, right? I mean, like we are still in the early days, so this kind of bugs are still expected, right? You know, but I don't, you know, I don't think that 5 years down the road we still, you know, experiment this kind of bugs, right? We still experience this kind of bugs.
All the bugs will be fleshed out, you think, by that point?
Yeah, I think so. I think so. Because you know, if I mean, of course, we can still like, you know, miss one or two critical bugs that people only discover after 10 or 20 years. Like just similar to how open SSL bug were discovered after 20 years, right? But I think if we give the technology, if we give the, you know, platform and everything enough time to test, I think it's going to be robust enough for anyone to use. And really, like the way I view, you know, decentralized trading and all the decentralized platforms is that, you know, it's a place where you can trust, but at the same time you can also verify, right? Because everything is transparent, everything is out there, and you can, if you need to, you can just go to the public chain and you can just verify all the transaction, all the parameters, right? But meanwhile, on the centralized system, you said you can trust them. But, you know, like there's no way that you can actually verify what's happening in the background, right? Whether they used your fund to send it, you know, to support, you know, illegal activities. You have no way to verify it.
Right. Yeah. Right? It's because they keep everything behind closed doors. Another point that's often overlooked in these public blockchain networks is like, you know, we say, oh yeah, everything's public and transparent and auditable. But like, what does that really mean, right? For the average person who's not necessarily going through and looking at the raw blockchain data. But you have to trust that, you know, game theoretically in these public systems that, you know, all the knowledge that's available is priced in. And once somebody finds out, you know, because, everybody is parsing through the blockchain in real time every minute, just, you know, waiting to monitor a double spend, waiting to monitor a crash, waiting to monitor this so they can hedge their risk. And so, you know, people forget like the importance of these public networks is that even though you're not monitoring it and, you know, somebody is and you'll know about it. Like, for instance, that one, you know, there was an inflation bug in Bitcoin that got found maybe call it 6 months ago or something. And, you know, you could have verifiable proof that it was never exploited. But at the end of the day, it's like, there are those bugs that still get found. So it's pretty crazy.
Yeah. But I do think that, you know, we have come quite a long way from 2017 and even last year as 100%. Well. We have lots of firms now that are really on top of the stuff like Chain Analysis and CoinFirm and Parsec.
Chain Code Labs.
Yeah. So there's all these companies that are now looking at this and monitoring and issuing almost real-time alerts if money starts to disappear when it shouldn't have, and potentially even have the ability to freeze those funds at the exchange level and return it to the rightful owner, which is something that 2 years ago was unfathomable. It would have caused a hard fork if you even mentioned it.
Seriously, dude.
And,
it's a great
and
point.
I was trying to think of any other industry that has a 99% drawdown and still goes on thriving. And I actually thought of one.
Oh my God.
Are you ready?
No, I'm not ready. I don't want to know.
Motocross.
Motocross.
That's right. Only in motocross doing and those daredevils can they fly off a mountain, break 18 bones, and come back to race in another year or two with a big smile on their face. Only crypto and motocross can you handle these drawdowns.
We are all suckers for pain. Let me just say that. I think everybody.
We're the financial daredevils.
We are the financial masochists. Or is it sadists? Which is the one that likes the pain? I think that's the sadist. Anyhow.
No, the sadist likes to inflict the pain. The masochist. Why am I explaining this to you?
Okay, let's move on. Let's move on.
You set me up.
I set you up. But I don't know these things. Anyhow, Loy, while we still have you, again, first off, thank you. You spent an hour with us and this has been a lot of fun. Are you having fun?
Yeah. It's just been great.
Awesome. You know, this is one of the things that we like to ask everybody we bring on the show, kind of just some closing questions to get a little character and hear more about, you know, who you are and what kind of makes you tick. So, you know, who's one person, and it doesn't have to be in crypto, it doesn't have to be anything specific, just one person in the world who has made a deep and lasting impression, and what was that impression?
Let me think about it, because I've been interacting with a lot of like interesting people. But recently I watched, you know, the Netflix series about Bill Gates.
About who?
And I think about Bill Gates, right?
Who's that?
Oh, Bill Gates?
Bill Gates. Fuck yeah.
Yeah. And I think I just have more reason to admire him and as a person, as a human being. And, you know, as a genius who invented, like, you know, Microsoft and everything. But now he actually, like, you know, spend a lot of time and resources in trying to solve other bigger problems in the world, you know, from the basic one, like a toilet to, like sustainable energy and all these things. And I think that's a great human being that we are lucky to have in our lifetime.
Powerful.
So basically, I think he just motivates a lot of people, like young people and people who want to innovate, to keep solving problems, to improve our worlds. And of course, you know, he's solving a much bigger problem in terms of scope but it's still like inspire and motivates like people like me to keep like doing what we are doing.
That's awesome. And to close it out, if this was the first podcast that someone getting into the space had heard, what would you want them to know?
Yeah, crypto is awesome. Decentralization is awesome. You know, you can try your first dab on kyberswap.com or on any other wallet that integrate with Kyber.
Classic. Love it. Love it. Love it. Yeah, guys, I actually highly recommend downloading KyberSwap on the iOS store on Android. I use it. Great decentralized exchange, safe, very principled. And Loy, it was quite a pleasure. Are you going to be at San Fran Blockchain Week, by the way?
I'm going to miss it, unfortunately. Okay. Yeah, just too much of trouble lately. Yeah. So the team wanted me to stay.
Well, they're smart. They care about you. They know that if the leader goes down, then they're going to be stalled.
So, Loy, where can the good people of Crypt Nation reach out to you if they have any other questions? Do you have a Twitter or something else that you prefer to be contacted at?
Yeah, I am on Twitter at Loy_Liu. And, you know, I'm always active on our Telegram channel as well at Kyber Network.
Amazing.
Fantastic.
Perfect. All right, Crypt Nation, that does it for us today. Thank you so much for joining us and spending a whole hour with us this morning or this afternoon. Maybe it's on your way to work, falling asleep, whatever it is, guys. Thank you so much, and we will see you very soon. Loy?
I hope you're not falling asleep on your way to work.
Well,
that's dangerous.
It is either or.
Thanks a lot, guys. Yeah, it's been great. Awesome.
Save big this holiday season. All in the Kroger app. Buy two, get three free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up. Then get a flavorful Kroger spiral sliced ham for 89 cents a pound with an additional $25 purchase. Limit two, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details. At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.